Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Bridges to Business Radio.
Hello, this is Ann Revel Petcher, your host of Bridges to Business Radio show here in Wilmington. I'm taking the liberty this week of expanding Earth Day to Earth Week. And we have two people in the studio today that are going to talk to us about things that have to do with Mother Earth a little bit. I would like to introduce to you today Don DeSantis, who's the marketing coordinator at Applied Resource Management. That's ARM's geothermal division, where they essentially do geothermal well drilling. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you on board here. We also have Deb Namaska. Dr. Namaska is with the Marine Biotechnology Center of Innovation here in Wilmington. Welcome, Deb.
Thank you, Ann.
It's great to have you here. So tell me, what is the Marine Biotechnology Center of Innovation?
It is an independent nonprofit 501c3 organization that was established to help translate North Carolina's marine-related discoveries into novel products and services as a means to drive economic growth for the state.
Oh, really? And so where are you located?
We're actually located on the Crest Research Campus at UNC Wilmington. We have basically leased one of their offices down in the Center for Marine Science building, and that's the area where the new Marbionic building has also gone up, which is very exciting. It's a public-private partnership that's going to house both companies as well as academic researchers.
That is a very cool space over there, right on the water.
Absolutely.
I feel bad that you have to look at that every time. Stuck out looking at the ocean and the intercoastal waterways and all of the oyster growing and, what a horrible life it is. So you were formed essentially for economic development purposes.
That is correct.
And tell us how that works.
Well, basically what we're trying to do is create an inventory of all the resources that exist within North Carolina's system. We refer to them as our stakeholders. And this includes both public and private universities as well as small and large organizations. Once we've created an inventory of about 230 different technologies or expertise, and we've used it recently with a large European Fortune 500 company that said, "What do you got?" And we said, "What do you need?" And we went in and kind of matched their interest to some of the technologies we had. And we've had an initial meeting where they're interested in pursuing further some of the technologies that we brought forward. That's so our whole mission is to try to expedite the path towards the market from these technologies that are across the entire state, and along the coastal ribbon in particular, but also inland as well.
That's interesting. So these technologies are coming primarily from researchers at universities?
Largely, yes. But some of the technologies may already be in a small company, and we'll help that small company get bigger or find a partner to help or find additional funding to help develop the technologies further.
Sure. Why is it that we should be investing in this kind of thing?
There's a huge need to meet a global population of almost 9 billion people by the year 2030. We are going to need more food, water, and energy. Uh-huh. And since the Earth's surface is covered 70% with water, in particular the oceans, we think that the resources in the marine environment can help meet those needs, and that North Carolina, in particular, is perfectly positioned to capitalize on some of its research, for example, in aquaculture, to try to drive an improvement in protein source to feed the global population going forward.
Well, that's interesting. Give us another example. I think for people in the business community especially, seeing the kinds of things that might come out of this is very helpful.
One of the things that we're working with a company that's actually outside of North Carolina but has come in to partner with one of our researchers here is on using algae to treat wastewater and turn it into clean water.
Excellent. Is this part of the gray water discussion?
Technically, it's not even gray. It's dirty water. It's municipal wastewater.
Interesting.
And they can cultivate algae in that wastewater, and what comes out is clean water. Now, not potable, drinkable per se, but it could be turned into drinkable water with a few more steps. However, you can turn it back to use it to, in industrial purposes, for example, to wash down commercial industry preparation processing plants. Mm-hmm. When you think about taking clean water that's drinkable and hosing down our pig farms in order to move out the waste, it's a large waste of water. So if you could recycle water that through this algae process, you'll have a much more efficient process.
Interesting. So how our listeners are all pretty much in the business community, pretty broad swath of the business community. But we're always trying to figure out how we can get involved with the organizations that are here in town. What kinds of things, what kinds of initiatives maybe are out there where businesses can have an impact on what you're doing?
Well, there are a lot of opportunities depending on the business. So, for example, if they're interested in the sciences themselves, they can coordinate with us to help find a researcher that might do some research, and they could apply for funds from the federal government, SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research Grants. And that's something that's underutilized, in especially along the Wilmington area. So we're trying to help partner people that way. And we have actually put some faculty together with businesses so they could apply for that funding. And it helps both of them to advance their technology. The other aspect is there's the whole aspect of commercializing and developing and marketing these products once they come out. So businesses could work with NBCOI to find out what's the latest product that's coming down the pike and how can they participate in bringing that to market.
Interesting. So how would they go about connecting with you to do that? Is there a central location for all of the activities you're undertaking? Or,
well, we're a small organization of three people, so
it's
all here. And we have regional offices in Morehead City as well as in Research Triangle Park so that we can cover North Carolina's vast marine-related research areas. So what we recommend is that somebody just reach out to me directly or through our website, nbcoi.net. And we're happy to follow up with them and figure out what we can do to connect them with the right people. We look at our goal is to be the nexus for collaboration, information, and commercialization, not just across North Carolina, but globally. And to that end, we're working hard with one of my colleagues here in town, Randall Johnson. I'm bringing an international meeting on the business of biomarine resources to Wilmington in 2015.
Oh, that's really cool. Talk about that.
Well, so this is an organization that started out in some terrible cities like, you know, France, London, Halifax. This year it's in Portugal and Qashqai. Mm. And then we're going to bring it to Wilmington in 2015.
Great.
And so a number of businesses have already contacted us about how they can help and support this. The idea of this meeting is not scientific so much, where you talk about basic research, but how do you apply it? So the idea is to create business deals, and it's CEOs and top executives from organizations involved in marine bioresources. They're referring to it as the new blue economy.
Oh, great.
And they track the number of deals that are made and the value of those deals. So London is over 17 million. In deals that were conducted as a result of that meeting, and Halifax is over 6 or 7 million at this point. So it's an opportunity for Wilmington and North Carolina and the Southeast region of the United States as well to showcase its efforts in this area and connect globally.
Well, that's really right up your ballywick. That's that sort of connecting thing you're talking about, being
Absolutely.
That nexus. Interesting. So if organizations felt like they had something that they wanted to contribute to what you're doing, they would just contact you and you would figure out where to plug them in.
That's exactly right.
Oh, that's really cool. I think you're good. What you guys are doing is really, really fascinating.
We're very excited by it. And we have found that many of the institutions that we work with are very excited by the ability to have more of a global reach without having to do it one-on-one, just like this large organization. Instead of going to 5 to 10 different institutions to see what they have, they came to us. We had all these technologies in a database, and we just searched it and said, I think you might like that, and maybe that might help, and we built discussions around it.
Sure. I know everyone out there right now listening is thinking, give me another example. Tell me one more thing that they do. Give me an application for this knowledge.
Another application for the knowledge would be we have seafood safety. Most people do not realize that 30% of the seafood that you eat is misidentified.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, you might not think it's a big deal. It might just hurt your pocketbook. You think you're going to get black sea bass and you're really getting, you know, I don't know, cod or tilapia. Mm. Because it's a white fish and it's got all the stuff on it and you can't taste the difference.
Right.
More importantly, there are people who are severely allergic to certain types of fish,
right,
not just shellfish.
Sure.
So if they're eating something that they don't know what it is, it could be very dangerous. So 30% of the seafood is misidentified. Whether it's intentional or non-intentional is irrelevant. It just is. And so one of the things we're working with two faculty members at Duke and NC State on how to develop basically technology to identify seafood based on its protein content.
Ah.
So we would be able to say, yes, this matches the protein of black sea bass, so therefore you're good to go.
Wow. That's very cool. That's cool. Okay. All right. We're going to come back and talk to you in a minute. We're going to move over to a different kind of water. We're going to move over to groundwater instead of ocean water. And this bridge is to business show. You know, it's kind of cool. We deal with every kind of water and getting over water. And now we're going to get underwater here. So talk to me a little bit about ARM Geothermal. What is ARM Geothermal? What do you do?
We are a water well drilling company. We also specialize in environmental consultation. And the marriage of the two is geothermal heating and cooling. And geothermal literally means heat of the earth. And what we do essentially is we exploit the second law of thermodynamics. Now bear with me. Which states that heat moves to cold. And what we do with that is we reduce your energy consumption by reducing how hard your HVAC system has to work to heat and cool your home.
Okay.
And we do that by sinking loops into the ground.
Like literal loops.
They are 1-inch HDPE, highly conductive pipes. And we run water through them. It's no contaminants or anything. And it comes through a special water source heat pump, which then drops that temperature down to the ground temperature at 250 feet, which is 62 degrees. So your AC system has to heat and cool from 62 degrees as opposed to 97 degrees in the summer and 28 degrees in the winter. And that replaces your compressor fan, which is that noisy fan outside that kicks on when your AC is running. So that is completely eliminated and replaced by free geothermal heat transition. And does the same job more efficiently.
If the audience was sitting here looking at me right now, they would see this look on my face like, okay, that just makes me ask all these questions.
So it's complicated.
There must be some form of pump. The water has to move,
yes.
Right? Okay.
You need a normal, like if you had a water well, it would be a very similar pump.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's a geothermal heat pump. It takes the 62 degree temperature from how many feet below?
Well, usually around here we go about 250 feet.
Wow.
We can go to 300 and use less loops, which reduces a manifold system that you also have. It brings all the loops together and then brings it to your water source heat pump. But 250 feet is a good temperature. The ground temperature is stable at that depth. You know, 5 feet below, you might have some influence from the sun and temperature of the air.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get down to 250 feet, there's no variation. It's like being in a cave. It's like heating and cooling your house from a cave. It's going to be the same temperature all year round, and it's a nice, comfortable, mean temperature of 62 degrees.
It's a little chilly.
My dad would love it. But yeah, for me, that's a little cool.
When it's about, I don't know, what was that terrible cold day we had this winter? It's something, I don't know, 15 degrees or something ridiculous, like Buffalo land here. I understand the efficiency. And I think that becomes pretty clear. But the actual installation must be outrageously complicated.
It's not really. We have drilling rigs already because we drill water wells all over this area is on water wells because they don't have county water. So it's the same concept. You just drill, let's say, a 4-ton house. Let's say it's a 3-bedroom house, 2,000 square feet. It would probably need 3 or 4 loops. So we'd come out and we'd drill 1-foot holes in the ground, 20 feet apart, sink these loops down, grout it with a thermally conductive grout, and then it's all underground.
Sorry, what's a grout?
It's like, you know, what's in between tile.
Oh, so it's literally grout.
Grout, yes.
Oh,
It's called bentonite, and it's very conductive for heat. So that water, let's say it's the summer, and it's coming out of your house really hot, and then it goes down to the ground, that pipe and that grout allows that heat to disperse into the nice cool ground, and then that water comes back up cool, and it envelopes your refrigerant mechanism. Let's not get into the HVAC side of it. It's a little complicated, but it basically envelopes that refrigerant and allows the heat from the refrigerant to disperse into the water and then does the whole system over again. Goes back into the ground, cools off, comes back up, takes the heat, brings it back to the ground.
Wow. Okay. So the biggest advantage here is we're saving a lot of money in the long run. Is that correct?
Yes. Your air handler doesn't have to work as hard, which reduces, you know, how much energy you're using.
Okay.
And then you don't have a compressor fan running at all. So that completely takes out a utility that pulls a lot of energy.
Exactly.
So
and you're not burning
the percentage,
gas or...
It's between 30% and 70% savings.
Now, who is doing this? Who is actually retrofitting their houses, if you will.
We do a lot of new construction. We also do a lot of retrofits. We're doing probably 3 residential geothermal systems a week. In Wilmington, we go up to New Bern and we go down to South Carolina. We're in South Carolina right now, actually. But also we're doing municipal buildings and federal buildings. We've done 2 large-scale geothermal projects on Camp Lejeune. And we're currently working on a rest area renovation in South Carolina. That's going to, you know, almost neutralize their bill.
Wow, that's incredible. So do you even notice that you have this? I mean, is there a...
The only thing you'd really notice is it's about this. The water source heat pump is about the size of a water softener, and it's in your garage. So other than that, it's not, you know, any more in the way than a normal one. And you won't have that big noisy fan outside.
And you're essentially utilizing water. You know, a lot of people have seen these systems where the floors get heated, right?
Yes.
And is it similar to...
Not really. You can use geothermal to heat a radiant floor.
Okay.
And it is kind of the same concept, except what we're doing is using a refrigerant to sweep, using the water to sweep the heat in and out of the refrigerant, whether it's a heat sink or a heat source.
Okay.
It works both ways, summer and winter. Just if it's really cold, brings the heat in. If it's really hot, sends the heat out. Whereas a radiant floor is usually just keeping it warm.
I see. So you're installing in houses. You're installing in government agencies. How about businesses?
Yeah, absolutely.
Popular for new construction, I would assume.
Yeah, for new construction. I mean, it's popular for new construction all across the board because there is drilling involved.
Sure. Right.
So a lot of people don't want their yard torn up, which is going to happen when you drill into the ground 250 feet. But a lot of it is, let's say your HVAC system goes out. If you live on the beach, it's probably going to be between 8 and 10 years. If you live inland, it's going to be about 15 years. A geothermal system lasts for 30 years, and the pipes in the ground, the HDPE, they're called U-bend loops, they're lifetime. If somebody's HVAC system is going out already, a lot of time they decide, I'm tired of replacing this thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to put out a little extra money up front to have something that lasts twice as long.
Sure. What are the environmental impacts?
Well, it reduces the environmental impact. One, by reducing your footprint of your house. And two, when we recycle that water and it comes up and through the loops and back out, you're essentially using the ground's heat to power your HVAC system instead of, let's say, gas. A lot of people around here have gas or generators, and it eliminates that need.
That's really interesting. So we have one opportunity here to look at the environmental perspective by sort of retrofitting your house, or when you're building something new, using a different approach to heating and cooling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to go back to Deb for just a second and talk about when people think about environmental issues and your center. I mean, what is it about utilizing what's already in the sea to be more efficient with the way we utilize our resources?
I think one of the things that we mentioned before is use of organisms like algae, you know, to purify water, to be a source of protein, to be a feed supplement to animal agriculture or something along those lines. I think the other aspect is capitalizing on our knowledge from marine species like fish, taking them on land and cultivating them on land so that you're not over-harnessing the fish. We now know that our oceans are overfished.
Absolutely.
There was an article in the paper just this week, again, a 30% number, but 30% of the seafood sold is illegally caught. So 30% of the seafood that we're eating is not caught legally. And that impacts, there's all these efforts in place, World Ocean Council, to keep certain species of fish from being over harvested. And so if you're eating something and you think it was harvested appropriately under the right guidelines and limits, it may not be. So there's a lot of pressure right now on our ecosystems, and by bringing them into other avenues like aquaculture on land with totally recirculating water systems and waste treatment. I visited a facility in Maryland, and they are totally self-contained. They actually use city water and add salts to it to make salt water and cultivate marine species.
Wow.
But the key is that they're self-contained. The water is 100% recycled, mm-hmm. and there's no waste effluent. They recycle the waste. They find a way to turn the waste into another product. And that's one of the things that actually UNC Wilmington and Chancellor Miller and a number of the people there are very interested in trying to develop their aquaculture facility further to provide more protein, but also to really be the cutting edge of trying to implement some of those processes.
Mm-hmm.
And that saves our oceans and also our global population.
Right, exactly. What about the community here, the biotechnology community here? Can you speak to that at all?
Well, I think it's vibrant and growing. I mean, there's been a lot of effort, especially just in the 2 years that I've been here, and not because of the MBCOI per se, but the Center of Innovation Entrepreneurship was established by UNC Wilmington, and they're playing a major role in spearheading the biotechnology community from their own efforts. The Biotechnology Center has had a regional office in this area for about 7 or 8 years with Randall Johnson at mm-hmm. the helm, and he's done a phenomenal job of trying to bring people together, not just in Wilmington, but across the whole Southeast region,
right.
to try to marry organizations and technologies together to help spur that kind of development.
Yeah, and that's a broader ranging thing than just marine biotech.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah. So it would be very fun to be able to get those folks together a little more often and be able to take more advantage of what each other has to offer.
Well, one of the things about marine biotech, we define it very broadly. Marine is anything of or affecting the sea. Bio is any living organism, and technology is applying knowledge. So we would go to, for example, an engineering department that might be developing a new sensor for temperature or pH. And you say, why? Well, we want to deploy it in the ocean because when they come to build the platform for wind turbines
yeah,
or
right.
oil drilling, they're going to disturb the environment.
Yeah.
And that could be a very useful tool. So it's not obvious to people why we'd be working with an engineering department on a temperature sensor, but that's an example. So it's the good and the bad. It's a very broad area. So we're canvassing broadly, and now we're trying to focus on those that have the most value for the market in the nearest term to try to bring it forward and stimulate growth.
Mm-hmm. How do people, how are you able to make these kinds of connections? There are so many people, and there are so many ways you can touch base. How do you make those connections?
Really, it's by networking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fortunate to have a lot of colleagues that are willing to introduce me to other people,
mm-hmm.
and they introduce me to other people. For example, this one company that contacted us, I had met somebody by phone 6 months ago, and somehow it got around, and they called me. So it's networking.
It's about the
network. Get the word out.
Yep. Exactly. Well, that's what we try to do. So tell us about how you guys find your customers.
Generally speaking, they find us.
Ah.
We do have a commercial, and we do, you know, network and go to home shows and explain. 90% of the time, the people we stop at the home shows say they have no idea what we're talking about. And then
right.
we explain it to them and they say, oh my goodness, it's amazing. But the people who come to find us, they're looking for a solution. They're tired of paying $350 mm-hmm. bills in the summer. They have a tax return,
right.
Which brings me to the tax incentive. North Carolina has an amazing tax incentive. You get about 60% of it back between federal and state.
Now, that's not one of the incentives they're thinking of striking, is it?
No.
No, Deb's shaking her head. No, no.
No. It's set to expire in, I believe, 2015, unless they renew it. But right now, I believe it's 30% state and 20% federal. I might have that backwards, but the state has a cap. So people realize that. They want to invest in a little bit more clean energy, and they Google geothermal, and
sure.
they find us.
And now is a good time for them to do that as they're getting their tax returns back.
Absolutely.
And they have a little bit more. Is this a very expensive process?
It's not. It costs about, upfront, double what you would pay for a brand new HVAC system. So if you already have your air handling unit and, you know, all the parts inside your house, if you're doing a retrofit, it's going to be a little less than that.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, you get about 60%, 50 or 60% of it back after you do your tax returns, for now.
Well, I would think that most people wouldn't necessarily know to Google geothermal when they're thinking about a house. They just don't. Do they not work with, I don't know, architects or?
We get a lot of business from architects. Like I said, a lot of it is federal and municipal, and then a lot of their employees end up contacting us.
I
and
see.
It's just, it's word of mouth, and it's getting out there and doing shows and doing
it's
things
like this.
It's
getting that word out.
Yeah. And just letting people know that it exists.
Well,
and once they realize
great.
It does, then the seed is planted.
Yeah.
And,
exactly. What kinds of questions did I not ask you guys that you think your audience might want to know?
Well, I think the biggest thing is what can the general public do to help? That would be great. We talked about businesses and academic institutions and government institutions, but the public plays a huge role in trying to promote these areas for development. It would be great if we had more public interest and cooperation and volunteerism for things like the MBCOI. We have people reaching out to us. I speak at a number of different places. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here and get our message out. And from that, I actually get contacted by people in the general public. What can I do to help?
Excellent.
And we give them examples. We can use help on, for example, for this meeting, we're going to need help in teams and committees to help coordinate all the activities. We're actually going to an international meeting in San Diego in June, Bio 2014.
Oh, good.
It's an international meeting for biotechnology. And we're helping UNC Wilmington promote some of their technologies as well as MoreBionic. And more importantly for us, we're promoting MBCOI. So we're trying to reach out at that convention to attract people to MBCOI and also North Carolina.
Excellent. Great. And if they want to talk to you about that?
Just go on MBCOI.net. That's our website. There's a complete contact information there. You can call me directly at my cell phone is the easiest way to get me. And it's listed on all my cards.
And so it'll be on the website.
It'll be on the website
here as well. And what about you guys? What did I forget anything that people need to know? And if not, how do they call you when they have a question?
Well, you can reach us online at www.armgeothermal.com or we're on Facebook and Twitter and
that. The social media presence.
But also, I think people might want to know, how long does it take to recoup the cost?
Oh,
and
good.
Generally speaking, it's 3 years. Your power bill is reduced because your energy usage is reduced. And even without the tax incentives, you're going to get that back in a couple of years.
That's great. Super. Okay. Well, we want to thank both of you for everything you're doing for Mother Earth. And thank you both for being on the show today. This is Anne Revelle-Petcher signing off for Bridges to Business. Until next time.